TNKR Media.
Welcome to Inspiring Entrepreneurs, our 15th season, showcasing stories from outstanding business people presented by BDO Canada. My name is Dan Delmar, along with Mike Newton of BDO. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Today, it's a bit of a pet peeve for both of us. It's come up on the show many times over the years. That is packaging, the amount of packaging we use, how wasteful it is, how costly it is. Today, we have a solution.
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting. It's going to take us to this whole new thought process. If you thought you were the last time you were going to have to carry something reusable back as like your grocery bag, this is where this direction is taking us in terms of your shipping items or bags or, you know, and probably it's going to go beyond bags at some point. So.
Yeah, so the company is called PicPack, and Camille Delaurier was there from the very beginning. She's going to be representing the owner of PicPack on the show today. And so that is on the way. It's, you can reuse the PicPacks up to 50 times, basically with participating companies. If you go to checkout, you know, if you're ordering something online, you pay the upcharge, and you get this environmentally friendly reusable packaging. So definitely saving a lot of manufacturing there if these things are used 50 plus times. Each. So very interesting concept that is on the way. So we're talking a lot about supply chain and shipping. And on that theme, Yoram Mlekic, our specialist at BDO Canada, will talk about new ESG reporting requirements. A new Senate bill is very important for some companies to keep an eye on. They will have reporting requirements in the next few weeks. So that incredibly important segment, if you are doing international shipping, is coming up with Yoram later in the program. But first, Mike, let's get to current affairs and this piece from Harvard Business Review, Leading People and How Great Leaders Balance Ambition with Humility. This is something that we have to keep talking about, I think. We talked about it a lot during the pandemic and going forward, the new way people are working, the differences between generations, which we'll get to again in a few minutes, empathy and humility.
Yeah, there's no doubt that I think that, you know, you look at the leader and, you know, in many cases we see leaders as ambitious and aggressive and in some cases overly confident and aloof, which there's a time and a place for, no doubt. I think you also have to respect the fact that humility to your team and to yourself kind of grounds us all a little bit. It grounds the employees. They want to see that leaders do have a human aspect to them. You know, where you might have hid everything 50 years ago today, it's, you know, I don't want to say you're an open book, but I think you do have to recognize every situation has a potentially different approach to dealing with it. And the more conscious you are of this, the better. And the other advantage to being humble is it really is helps us keep an accurate assessment of our own abilities, our strengths and weaknesses. You know, when you get into that aloofness and you get into this, I can do no wrong, you have a tendency of separating yourself from everybody else and not keeping yourself in that in environment. So it includes EI, emotional intelligence. It includes this constant continuous learning, which, you know, from my perspective is a must. I'm always reading something, whether it's online articles, whether it's books. To me, the day we stop learning should be the day that we're no longer here.
Now, Mike, leaders have to sort of review their performance on a regular basis. So I love doing this in the media context. You know, I very much preach media coaching sessions. But in general, leaders should keep a checklist of things they have to work on in terms of their general performance. How do leaders miscommunicate when tensions are high?
Well, I think we're in that period right now, and there's no doubt that as we look at the economy, we look at the concerns, the mix between high interest rates, inflation, we're seeing job losses in a number of places. I think most environments within the corporate world at this point are certainly a little tenser than they have been in the past. And I think what, you know, some of the key exercises here really have to be. It goes back to the first thing we said. There's a little bit of humility here. There's a little bit of vulnerableness in all of this. And, you know, as much as you want that stoic leader that is inspiring confidence, there's nothing wrong with talking about some of the things we didn't do right that we're learning from. So, you know, don't just showcase only the successes. Move forward on, hey, we made this mistake. And you know, to me, it's never about making a mistake. It's what you do with a mistake. So you want to say you did something wrong, say, here's how we corrected it. Here's the direction we've taken. Here's what we've learned from it. And I think that humbling experience is certainly appreciated by the younger generations in today. Some of the older generations will look at it as a weakness when you describe the things you've done wrong. But depending on your audience, it really has to be a focus here on what you've done wrong. We also have a tendency to skip the non-update update. You know what? We don't have anything good to say, so I'm not going to say anything, which in today's world basically is interpreted as you're hiding something. You know, the worst is still going to come. What shoe's going to fall next? You know, I can go on with a whole bunch of different sayings. So, you know, don't hide behind the fact that nothing's going on. Get out there, even if you've got nothing to say. Just the fact that presence and you're willing to talk, your body language will say things are okay, and that in and of itself is huge. When things are, when everything's tough, we have a tendency of saying, but in a year from now or 2 years from now, things are going to be fine. The reality is people want to hear that, this is what we're doing today. They want to get, unfortunately in the workforce we're in today, if you rely on them being here in a year or 2 years, you can't always count on that. They want to know what's happening today. That's the world that we're in. And again, I don't hide, the hard decisions and the emotions. Humility and human aspect go a really long way.
So on the positive end, how to engage employees, not just sort of put out fires and improve your own performance, but how to take it to the next level. Engagement versus motivation. This also from HBR, the differences between the two.
So I could go on for this one for about half an hour. This is a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, because we have a tendency to interchange engagement and motivation and assuming that you're going to get the same result. We also have a tendency in surveys to get a really high engagement score and assume that everything is good. The world that we're living in today, engagement basically says, I'm happy where I am. This is good at what I'm, this environment is a comfortable one. Doesn't mean I'm going to do more. Doesn't mean I'm going to work harder. And unfortunately, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to be here for the next 20 years. So while it does indicate, as we said before, the instant moment of where things are, you can't assume that because your engagement score is high, that employee motivation is equally high. The two you would hope would go hand in hand, but they don't have to. And what I find very interesting is, you can take this and you can drill it down into, what do financial people love? They love charts. So, I can take a 4-quadrant chart that basically looks as, are my employees engaged and are they motivated? Well, if the answer to that in today's world is yes, they're motivated and yes, they're engaged, they're what we're going to consider an all-star in today's world. And anybody who has no to both of those, that's dead weight. You got to move that out. The more difficult ones lie in somebody who is highly engaged, who's happy to be where they are, but are not really motivated. To me, that's a cheerleader. That's somebody who says, this company's good. It's great. I'm not going to do any more, but, I'm going along with the mission. I'm going along with the scenario, which we always need cheerleaders. Unfortunately, you also need players on the field. So, while everybody's cheerleading, somebody's got to be doing the work. So there's got to be a higher level of motivation to get things done. And, I find it very interesting that, they are not, they don't go hand in hand. They're certainly linked. I don't think you can have a motivated individual who's not engaged, but you can certainly have an engaged individual who's not motivated.
From the communications perspective, that word engagement is so hot right now. I mean, it's used and overused. And I think it's an example of sort of digital newspeak, because when we talk about social media results, I often say, and I caution clients who sort of go all in on digital marketing and do nothing else. What does engagement mean? As you said, it's what people feel in the moment. It's a view. It could be a like in social media terms. But it doesn't necessarily mean you have a sustainable thing happening.
Right. You can't automatically assume because your workforce is highly engaged that anything other than immediate increased retention. And again, we hear the buzzwords of engagement. We hear providing that experience while they're coming to work. And that is vital. And I'm not saying we don't do that. We don't even slow down on doing that. But just don't make the mistake that because that assessment is high, that you're necessarily getting, more out of it. I mean, defining engagement is happiness. It's I'm proud to be here. It's the company is doing something that I believe in. That means they're engaged. Doesn't mean they're motivated.
And speaking of engagement, this interesting tweet, I like to bring up, tweets and viral posts about the workplace sometimes, Mike. And this one has, well into the six figures of engagement on Twitter. So Roshan posts this text message from his younger cousin, 22 years old, the cousin is. And the cousin says, "Hey, quick question. I have 14 months of work experience, 9 months at a big consultancy. If I were to join a Series B or Series C stage startup, what role should I apply for? CEO or COO?" Again, 22 years old, and he has 14 months as a consultant.
I'd love to answer that, but I'm laughing too hard.
It's ambitious, though. I mean, let's just give him that. And let's give a lot of younger generations the credit for being ambitious, because especially in creative mediums, with ChatGPT and all that, you really can be your own boss that quickly. I'm not sure you can lead a sophisticated startup at 22 necessarily, but you can certainly be your own boss.
But yeah, I don't necessarily think age has anything to do with it either. But, go back to the topic today is great leaders balancing ambition with humility, right? I mean, I'm not sure that's the most humble of requests at the end of the day. And somewhere in that exercise, your feet have to be planted on the ground. I am all for ambition, but ambition has to be tempered with a little bit of realism. And that continues to be a very difficult task in today's world when we're sitting in an environment where we all want to be ambitious. And, I don't know if anybody recently read John Tortorella, who is the coach of the Flyers, had a very interesting article recently about the frustrations that he has in the locker room and with a generational age gap. And nobody wants to ride the Pines anymore. They come in with their own entourage. They come in with their big contracts. And from day one, they should be, first line center. I guess that's the world we're in. It's also a byproduct, I guess, of the way we brought up our kids, by telling them they could do anything they wanted, whenever they wanted. And, there's some good in that, too.
And let's get right to our story. Camille Delaurier is in charge of marketing at PicPac. She's representing the entrepreneurs on the program today. And Camille, welcome to Inspiring Entrepreneurs.
Thank you.
So first question is the easiest. What is PicPac?
Well, PicPac is a reusable packaging for online companies, mostly. What we do is we have a reusable packaging. Is the same product as, what we use with the reusable paper bags in the grocery store. It's the same material that we use. So you receive your package in the mail with a reusable packaging. And instead of throwing it in the trash, you just fold it back up, you put it in the post, and it come right back to the company. So that way you can reuse the packaging up to 50 times.
So it goes back to the original shipper, right? At the end of the day. So this is in conjunction, I guess, with working with Canada Post or working with a number of other shippers.
Yeah, we're working with Canada Post mostly, exclusively, I'd say. And it comes back to us. So every PicPac, it comes back to our warehouse where we clean them. We make sure everything is fine. And then we ship them right back up to the original company who used it.
So is there any charge to send them back?
No, there's no charge to send them back. But what we do is, the way it works, we load them to the company. It costs about $4, $4 to $5, depending on the size, to the company. And the company then chooses if she wants to charge the fee to the customer. So if you choose to charge the fee, you charge it up to $4. So the customer, when he does his online order, he goes to his cart, and then he can choose normal shipping or environmental friendly shipping, which can cost up to $4. So there's no other fees for the company. But when we do this, when we charge the $4, the company usually have a little gift to give back. So maybe a 15% off on the next order, or $5 off of the next order. And this is the first option. And the second option would be that the company doesn't charge any fee, but they take it on them. So for them, the bag would be a lot, well, not cheaper, but for the customer it would be cheaper, but for the company would be like $5 instead of $1 if they charge $4 to the customer. I don't know if it's clear.
Yeah, no, it is. It's, but so when I mail it back, so I'm the end consumer. Yeah. When I send it back to you, I just drop it back in the mail. Where do I put it?
So you need to use Canada Post system, and you take out your example, you order jeans, you take out your jeans, you fold it back to a letter format. And it's usually pretty simple. We have QR codes on the bag. So you can just, if you're not sure how to use it, you can scan the code. And we have a little tutorial on how to send it back. And you also have like a sticker that you just put on it. The sticker comes with every order, every bag. So you just put the sticker. It has the returning address of our warehouse. You put it back in the mail, just like a letter, and it comes right back to us.
So do you have stats at this point of how many get returned? I mean, you know, we all think, I think of this and go, okay, you know, how many times do I go to the grocery store and forget to bring back my reusable bag? Or, you know, how often do I, you know, pile up the returning cans and never take them back to be validated?
Yeah, we have a pretty good return for the moment. We've been trying the system for about a year and a half, and we have 75% of return. Usually the little percentage off or dollars off the next order, it helps because you only receive it once the warehouse receives it. So if you don't send it back, you don't have your little gift. So this helps a lot because the people want their discount on the next order.
Camille, I was wondering about the inspiration for the product because, Mike, it kind of reminds me of those internal office envelopes with a little string, and then you'd cross off a name and then it would go to the next person. It sort of reminds me of that sort of system.
Yeah, well, the concept comes from Europe. Basically, the co-founder, she was wondering what there is here. And there was nothing, no alternative. We have like compostable and biodegradable bags. But spoiler alert, it's not as effective as it may sound. It's a little bit of a greenwashing. So she looked up. So there's nothing in Canada. So she went like, is there something in Europe? Is there something in the States? And there was something in Europe. So the concept comes from there. It's been around for several years and there are several companies. And here in Quebec, we're the first one and the only one right now.
Because I think one real interesting point on this in this environment is, yes, biodegradable packaging is great, but reusable packaging is even better because you don't have to manufacture that same package 25, 50 times.
Exactly. And what we do is once the bag is used for its 50 times, or if it comes and it's broken and we cannot use it up to 50 times, we take it and we send it to a company where we work with, and they take care of the end of life. So what they do is they melt the material and it's up to another life and another 50 lives. So it's not thrown in the trash once it's used 50 times.
That's great. That's great to hear. I mean, I'm assuming you have multiple sizes here. I mean, let's be honest. I'm sure the package sending your jeans is a lot smaller than the package sending my jeans. So, you know, how does that mean? Still folds up into an envelope and you send it back? Like, it doesn't matter the size?
Yeah. Well, right now we have two sizes. The bigger one can fit up to, I'd say, like a winter coat and winter pants. So it's pretty big. We don't have any worries for the moment with that. And there's a smaller size if you just order like a pair of shoes or just a simple tee. And with Canada Post, it needs to fold up to a letter. So it's it was a bit hard to know like up to what size we can go. So right now our biggest size is the biggest we could go, but it's pretty big. It fits a lot.
So at this point, I guess predominantly it's B2C, right? It's business to consumer at the end, as the end user. Are you doing this for larger quantities to go B2B?
Yeah, well, right now we're mostly B2B, I'd say. We have something to do with the customers because we have to, the customers, they need to know what we do in order to check the pick pack option at the end of the day. But we mostly work with businesses right now because we sell mostly to businesses. We don't sell to customers because it's the business that needs to have it firsthand. So right now we work with about 50 small businesses, and we're talking with larger companies that want customized bags because right now the bags are pick pack branded. But there are larger companies that want like multiple of them. And they say, oh, let's say I order 10,000. Could you do them customized? So we're definitely working with bigger companies that we cannot say for the moment.
Thanks for spoiling my next question is whether you could personalize them. But I can see this as being a great opportunity to do a little branding and as well as show this, get the resonance within the community on a business side. Are you right now, you say you have two sides. Are you looking at different sizes going forward? Are you looking at different products, or right now you're sticking to the staple two?
Well, for the basic sizes and the basic bag, we're staying with the two sizes right now. But we're working with a fragile packaging, I'd say, because right now it's just the polypropylene, we call it, the material. But right now we're working with an option that has more cushion on it. It's kind of difficult because we have to find the right product to put in it, because styrofoam usually isn't very environmental friendly. So we're working with a lot of people to find a way to make it good for the planet. So yeah, we're working on a, I'd say, fragile packaging where we could put jewelry, makeup, or even stuff from, I don't know, let's say you want to send food or stuff like that. Anything that would be more fragile, we will use this packaging, but we don't have it yet.
So I guess part of the challenge there is, how do you return it, right? I mean, the more insular, the more protective, the bulkier, I guess, it's going to end up being, unless it's an inflatable packaging or something of those sorts.
Well, we have to work with Post Canada. I'd say we try it, and then if we send it to Post Canada, they try it with their system, and then they would tell us what change we need to make and what worked. So it's a lot of back and forth, but we need to work with Post Canada for that.
We're talking packaging today, Mike, something that is necessary for so many companies out there. Camille Delaurier is in charge of marketing for PicPack. They do reusable packaging. And so if you're going to a store that uses PicPack, an e-store, for instance, you can pay the upcharge and go green and use this reusable packaging that is usable up to 50 times. So it's like that old system with the envelope, internal envelopes within an organization. You kind of just pass it back and forth, and that way you don't have to keep producing new envelopes 50 plus times. Is this the future, Camille? So thinking big, like, do you see the entire system one day going completely reusable? And is that realistic as a goal?
I hope so. I hope so. I'm not sure it's realistic for now. We need to educate people a lot and tell them that there really is a problem there with the single-use packaging. So yeah, I hope it's the future, and I think there is a way to do it, but it comes back to the customer first. The customer will decide if we go green.
You know, it amazes me every time I get a delivery. And you know, you buy something the size of a brick and it comes in the box the size of a microwave. And it's stunning how much packaging and how much waste is associated with this. So, I mean, at this point, right, I think to feed off of Dan's question is, right now, you know, you're focused on the customer being an individual. At some point in the future, I guess, if you want to get this widespread, you're going to have to be able to build to scale in order to adjust to much larger orders, industrial size orders, commercial size orders, and go from there. I understand you're not there yet, but what's involved in that kind of development? What would you need to move that forward?
We need a lot of work with the post services. Right now we're working with Canada Post, but if we were to move bigger and bigger, we would need to work with them. Right now we're not there yet, just because we're a baby. We're a baby company, and we want to get our customers that we have right now, we want to get them satisfied. And then once this works out, we could move to industrial orders, a size order. And, you know, maybe one day we could have from, you know, where in Asia, where it comes from, you know, your clothing. Sometimes you receive it in the packaging. And even if the packaging is environmental friendly, the bag or the clothes you order is in a plastic bag. So maybe someday we'll have them in a reusable packaging from the manufacturer itself. But right now we're not there yet.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that, you know, in order for this to go to the extreme, there has to be a massive international perspective on all of this, right? I guess the start is, let's start local, let's try and get this moving and go from there. What do you guys do for marketing? I mean, at this point, like you said, you're still in the infancy stage. There's a long way to go. I think there's so many great opportunities here. What are you guys doing to get the name out there, to develop products, and to market the daylights out of this?
Well, at first we wrote to multiple businesses where we were like, hi, we offer this service. We're new. Do you want to try it out? We offer for companies, we offer like a free trial where you could use the PicPak for several orders and see if it works with your customer. And then if you want to get into it, you could buy more of them. So with the company right now, we're doing this. And we're also doing a lot of publicities on social medias. And with the customer, we're working with the companies because we have to owe it with the to the companies that we work with. Some of them have huge following on social media. So when they introduced PicPak to their following, other businesses saw it, they contacted us. So right now it's, as we say in French, it's a lot of, well, we say, I don't know if we say mouth to mouth in English, but there's a lot of this that we're working with. And with the customers, we're just trying to educate them through facts and social media posts, a way to get through them so they understand that there really is a problem. And if you pay the little fee of extra, it can usually make a huge difference. Yeah, word of mouth.
Yeah, word of mouth is very important. Speaking of marketing, I'm curious, can you give me your bullet point list of your sell? What are your sales points? You know, the top of the list, obviously, to companies, here's your opportunity to really go green and to make a difference for the planet. What are your main selling points?
I'd say we expose the real problem with statistic. And a lot of company, they come back to us and say, oh, well, we use compostable bags. But here, I don't know if you're familiar with the compost system or the sorting center, what they do, but they usually don't accept these kind of bags. So they're still manufactured in, let's say, Asia, and then they come back here. And at the end of the day, it's not even, it's a lot of greenwashing, I say. So we have to sensibilize the companies to tell them, look, I know you think that you can put it in the compost, but it doesn't work like this here. So I'd say it's our main point. And then we're trying to tell them that it really makes a huge difference if you have, like, let's say 100 orders per week, and 50% of the person, they take the PicPak option. Well, at the end of the day, it's thousands of packaging that you save. So right now we're kind of doing this with the companies that we want to work with.
But I guess at some point to get into the UPSs and the Purolators, you're going to have some kind of arrangement, because obviously they're using their own packaging as it stands now. So I guess that might be one of the forays going forward. And the other I see, and it reminds me a little bit like, I don't know if you watch the hockey games lately, but, you know, the helmets are sitting with a CIBC or sitting with a decal on. I mean, there's clearly some advertising opportunities in front of you here as well.
Yeah, of course. And right now what's nice is that the businesses, if let's say I have a clothing brand and then PicPak comes to me and the clothing brand uses Purolator or UPS, they can still use it because once you ship the item with, let's say, UPS, well, it doesn't come back. It ships like a normal package. It's us that we need to work with Canada Post. But the companies that we work with, they don't have to change all of their delivery system to work with Canada Post. They can stay with whatever they're working with. And then us, when we fold it back, the customer, when he folds it back, he needs to put it in Canada Post, but not the company. So they don't have to change it.
I could think of a good partner, like when the next Minions movie comes out, for instance, you know, all the packages are Minions. Lots of viral marketing opportunities there.
Yeah.
So what's next? You got a couple of minutes left here. Where do you want to go with this? What is the what's the biggest challenge and what's the biggest excitement?
The biggest challenge is to educate the customers so that they can pay the extra fee. And I'd say what's next is enter in big companies that ships thousands of packages a day with our branded options. Of course, if the company wants a branded PicPak, we need to have thousands and thousands of Unity. So that's what next. We want to get to bigger companies and send PicPak in bigger format. And I'd say everything bigger.
So it's, you know, following that statement, if you wanted to get into the more, you know, commercial industrial side, I'm assuming you would work directly with a big business that's willing to help design with you and work through the R&D components.
Yeah, of course, we would find friends, because we're not here pretending that we're the experts. We work with a lot of people that are experts and that they can help us with future development of product. And also, I want to add that we want to enter in the States, because there's not a lot of option there right now. But we will start by educating people here. And once we do that, we could enter the States.
The last question for you. How did you get involved? What was your? I mean, other than the obvious environmental side, what drove you here?
Well, as for myself, the owner, the founder, Jade, was my roommate. So I got involved. It wasn't really a choice, really. I saw everything from the beginning. I saw her. She always had these kind of crazy ideas. And we were in the kitchen and we would say, no, you won't do that. You won't do that. And then she came up with this idea and we all knew that it would work. We were like, the last idea was silly, but this one's good. So I kind of got involved in the beginning, I say, and she's been a friend of mine for many years. So I support her fully. And it was a no-brainer for me to get involved and help her in the project.
Shout out to Jade Trepanier, founder of PicPack. And thank you, Camille Delaurier, for participating in the program today. We'll have our one piece of advice for inspiring entrepreneurs in a few minutes. But first, let's check in with our BDO specialist. Yuris Mlekic is business services and outsourcing partner at BDO Canada and guest host of Inspiring Entrepreneurs. Hello, Yuris.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Mike. Always happy to be on. Thank you for having me.
And Mike, this bill S211 on new ESG reporting standards and how it affects Canadian supply chains. The goal really is to have more ethical supply chains.
Yeah, it's a very interesting move. I think right now it's very controversial. I mean, obviously the supply chain discussion in and of itself is very controversial right now across the world, and where we source our products from and the way they treat people in various parts of the world. The Canadian government put this into place recently, and there's been a lot of buzz as to whether this has been a politically motivated move and or whether this is actually going to find its way into making a difference. But as much as I'd love to put Yuris on the spot for his opinion, I'm going to let Yuris do a little more technical on the side, because I can babble, but ask me what Bill 211 is and just not my space. Yuris, it's all yours.
I appreciate that, Mike. Thanks for the intro. So in fact, I find it very apropos with the guest that we had on earlier on the show, being in the reusable packaging solution space. Many businesses are actually being scored on this new performance evaluation criteria, what we may know as ESG. It actually stands for environmental, social, and governance. And there's a score on that. So it's actually a metric that's used these days to help as part of evaluating businesses on what they're worth. So I think it's very useful to understand what this stuff is. It surrounds environmental and social impacts. As far as Bill S-211 is concerned, like you said, Mike, it's a bill that's new. It's effective as of January 1 of this year. The Canadian Parliament had passed it, and the aim is really to strengthen and enhance social supply chain disclosures within this ESG reporting space. And Canada's international commitment is to go against forced labor and child labor, so that is certainly a part of it. The bill applies to a corporation. It applies as well to a trust, a partnership, or any other unincorporated organization that engages in any of the following activities. So I'm going to name them, and I'm going to try to go slowly so that the audience could really pay attention, because there's some particularities involved with this. So just follow along if you can. It's basically the activities are producing, selling, or distributing goods in or outside of Canada. And then the second one is importing goods produced outside of Canada. And lastly, if there's an entity that controls another entity that engages in any one of those first two activities, it gets trapped into the bucket. So once an entity falls into one of those buckets, Mike, it's subject to the bill. And then there's further criteria that are looked at. So the next criteria is if it's a publicly, if it's a company listed on the stock exchange in Canada. So if it's a public company. And then the second one is if it has a place of business in Canada, does business in Canada, or has assets in Canada. And based on the consolidated financial statements of the group, that it meets one of the following two conditions. So it's got to meet at least one of the following, two of the following conditions that I'm going to mention, but in one of the last 2 years. So one of the last two financial years. And the conditions are having at least $20 million Canadian dollars in assets. The second one is generating at least $40 million Canadian dollars in revenue. And then the last one is having an average of at least 250 employees. So it's any two of those three that if it meets, it's going to be subject to these Bill S-211 reporting requirements. So again, I'll just repeat it quickly because I kind of said it fast. It's having at least $20 million in assets, having generated at least $40 million in revenues, having an average of at least 250 employees. So it's any two, at least two.
And I'm going to make life a little bit easier. We can drive you to the BDO website, and the BDO website actually has the reporting requirements on Bill S-211. Look, I get it. I understand. It's large enough at this point, so it's not capturing everybody. But this is, you know, this is another piece of information in a world where we're feeling like we're overwhelmed with reporting requirements. So a lot of people are going to look at this and they're going to say, you know what? Great. One more reporting requirement. What's in it for me? And what's this going to cost me? So what's the risk of not filing here? If I don't do it and I decide, you know what, one more piece that I'm not going to do, is there a risk that I'm going to get in trouble?
It's a great question. So there's a few risks. One of them being a reputational damage. Another one being disqualified from supply chains, which could be crippling for a business. And then the third one, which is, you know, it really stands out, is being subject to fines of up to $250,000. So they're quite hefty in terms of penalties. So I do urge any business owner, you know, that feels that they may fall into one of these buckets that I mentioned earlier. And like you said, if you go to the BDO Canada website, we certainly have it there in the insights. You know, if they have to report annually to speak to their professional advisors and assess, you know, if anything needs to be done. Like you said, Mike, our team, you know, here at BDO Canada has extensive experience in ESG reporting, and we're ready to help support our local businesses as they navigate through this compliance landscape, as you put it. In terms of what the reporting requirements are, you know, there's something due May 31st, 2024. So it's pretty imminent in terms of deadline. And essentially, you need to submit on an annual basis a supply chain risk report, which is to be published with the federal government on or before May 31st of each year. So the first one is May 31st, 2024. And the report basically needs to detail the steps your business has taken during its previous financial year to prevent and reduce the risk of forced labor or child labor in the supply chain.
I'm going to have to make a comment. I listened to the three risks associated with this for individuals. And the first one was reputational damage. I got to think any business who is consciously using forced labor and child labor is probably not overly concerned about reputational management. So hopefully you can trap them under the other two conditions.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's, I guess, a question of self-awareness in a way, or, you know, or being aware, just, you know, doing things maliciously. But look, to your point, Mike, there could be a number of reasons why this was brought up. In the end, it's aiming to go against forced labor and child labor, which I think we can all, you know, agree on globally that that's not a good thing.
And from the PR perspective, everyone has cell phones these days, so everyone could potentially be looking at your supply chain.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. So I think that goes, you know, and as far as being disqualified from supply chains, I mean, again, that might be a business incentive. But if everyone else is doing it and you're sort of stuck in the corner and are last to comply, it might be a problem for your business.
Euros Mlekic, business services and outsourcing partner at BDO Canada. Thanks, Euros. See you soon.
Thank you, guys.
And don't forget, you can head over to bdo.ca for lots more thought leadership and expert advice on issues like Bill S-211. And as we come to the end of our show, let's turn to our entrepreneur, or in this case, the representative of our entrepreneur, Camille Delaurier, who is in for Jade Trepanier, the founder of PicPac. And let's ask her for the one piece of advice for inspiring entrepreneurs, Camille.
Yeah, so I asked Jade for this one, but she told me that you have to believe in yourself first, believe in what you can do, and also believe in your product. You have to know that you can make a difference with your product and believe in what you do, because we started the company in university. She had no idea that she would do this, but when she saw the opportunity and the impact that her product could do, she just went for it. So yeah, believe in yourself and believe in your product.
Love it. And thank you to Jade Tapenia as well. Mike, I'm sold. I mean, might as well just do PickPack for all shipping as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I just keep thinking of ways that we can implement it here at BDO. I mean, you look at these opportunities and, you know, it's like I said, there's nothing that irks me more than to get a brick size package in the brick size item in the size of a microwave. So, you know, it's just, there's so much waste that's going on out there, and there's got to be, you know, this sounds like it's the beginning of something great, not only in the product itself, but in the philosophical approach to, you know, that reusable, we're out of what the normal market is. We've all come to get used to using the reusable bag when we go to get our groceries. So why can't we do this with shipping?
Camille Delaurier, PickPack, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks to you.
Coming up next week on Inspiring Entrepreneurs by BDO Canada, this will be interesting. Stuart Bain, CEO of North Star Earth and Space. They make technology that helps manage telecommunications traffic in space, satellite debris, and they support the sustainable management of natural resources here on Earth. A reminder, you can subscribe to Inspiring Entrepreneurs Montreal as a podcast on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or your favorite platform. Thanks, Mike. See you next week.
And looking forward to finding a way to navigate the roads. Now we can do it in the sky, at least.